My name is Connor Clifton. While Emily Hines is the one who attends Houston City Council meetings and takes notes, I will be the one reading those notes for you this week. Today's notes are from the council meeting on June 25th, 2025. First up, the mayor's report. Today, we met the mysterious Josh. Mayor Whitmire invited Josh Sanders, Chief of Intergovernmental Relations, IGR, and Alexa Aragonez, Deputy Chief of Intergovernmental Relations, to report on the Texas legislative session. Whitmire praised the IGR team and highlighted collaboration, years of experience, and relationships. This team had 6 members, down from 17 during the last legislative session. Mayor Whitmire implied that 17 is an unnecessary number who were likely friends in political appointments of former Mayor Turner. Okay, Sanders thanked his team and Houston's department heads and their liaisons. The city analyzed over 2,000 bills, narrowing it down to track about 1,700. Sanders spoke very highly of his team and their system. Our system is so completely flawless, it is the envy of every other municipality. They check with us constantly to see where we're at and what positions we have and what information we have on bills. You can read the full debrief at www.houstontexas.gov/govrelations. That's G-O-V-T, relations. Now, a selection of successful initiative, SB 1164, dealt with mental health and involuntary commitment. It clarified anosognosia, which the National Library of Medicine defines as a neurological condition in which a patient is unaware of their neurological deficit or psychiatric condition. Sanders said this bill should help compel folks into the treatment that they need, and that it fits within our homelessness priorities and is obviously in line with the mayor's efforts to end street homelessness. HB 3611 increased penalties for bandit signs. Sanders and Councilmember Castix Tatum remarked on blight and the often predatory nature of these signs. HB 1532 created a dredging district for Lake Houston, which will trigger some financial capabilities, I think. SB 1620 created a forensic science apprenticeship program funded by the state. Aragonez remarked on how the public sector is constantly losing expertise over to the private sector and the importance of forensic science to public safety. SB 22 created a film incentive program with $300 million every 2 years. There is a crew residency requirement, so they hope it will boost the economy as well. HAR 7 created a water supply conveyance coordination office with significant funding allocations, $1 billion annually starting in 2027. Sanders hopes Houston can tap into this fund for water-related infrastructure. HB 1584 requires electric utility companies to work with municipalities on a list of high-priority addresses for restoration during power outages. Sanders remarked on a successful presentation at the state's Department of Government Efficiency, or DOGE, committee on Houston's Ernst & Young Efficiency Report. He said it was lauded and touted and spun off legislation like a bill that will require school districts to do similar studies. The IGR team worked to amend some legislation to be more favorable to Houston. A selection, HB 2477 had something to do with changing office buildings into mixed-use buildings. The original bill did not consider the infrastructure updates needed and was amended to allow impact fees and other ways for municipalities to seek financial reimbursement. HB 30 dealt with disaster recovery and started out by only reimbursing for debris removal. It was amended to include spending on emergency shelters, overtime for emergency workers, water testing and treatment, and more. SB 38 was originally an anti-squatters bill and sped up the eviction process. It was amended to add more guardrails for tenants. Some legislation was unamendable, so the city lobbied for its downfall. A selection, SB 2858, aka the Super Preemption Bill. This bill would have expanded on last session's HB 2127, already legally challenged and making its way through the courts. SB 1065, which is essentially a guns in public places bill, quote Sanders, this bill would have prevented private contracts for conventions, sporting events, concerts, and other large events from banning firearms inside the venue. Examples include the rodeo, conventions at the George R. Brown, and concerts. Regarding budget appropriations, Sanders said their goal was to draw down as much money for Houston as possible. A selection. $100 million for the Lynchburg Pump Station, which provides 60% of the region's drinkable water and services 600 petrochemical facilities. Sanders said, Houston Water provides water in 7 counties. We have over 5.6 million customers. So we are not just the city of Houston's water utility. We really are the region's water utility system. $60 million for the Trinity River Authority to improve the Lake Livingston Dam. A lot of funding for small neighborhood parks. $10 million for 200 police vehicles. $5 million for a re-entry program. And $500 million for a re-entry program. Mayor Whitmire and many council members praised and thanked the IGR team. Mayor Whitmire said, "It's a blessing to watch y'all's chemistry and the direction that you took us. Of course, I had vision and subjects. I didn't hesitate to call someone when you asked me to. And people ask me, what's one of your greatest accomplishments? It's the team. It's the team that I put in place. Thanks, Mayor Whitmire, for putting other people above you." CM Peck said that past legislators didn't want to work with Houston because the city was, quote, just against legislation, end quote. She said, this is what true partnership looks like. Councilmember Flickinger attributed this year's successes to the fact that state legislators are happier with Houston now. Councilmember Davis thanked the mayor for his professional leadership. He said, the word of God said, where there is no vision, people perish. In conclusion, what a bootlicker. In conclusion, Sanders thanked the Houston area legislative delegation, the largest in Texas. He said it includes leaders of both parties, is bipartisan and collaborative. Now moving on to some agenda items. Item 4 accepted final work and approved the final payment of $664,000 for swimming pool upgrades at Tuffley Park. Item 5 accepted final work and approved a final payment of $664,000 for work done at the McWilliams Dog Park in Herman Park. Item 6 approved $199,000 for drug burn services for the police department. This service destroys narcotics-related property and evidence, which sometimes includes hazardous substances. They're burning all that weed at HPD! Item 7 approved $81,000 for 2 pairs of night vision goggles for the police department's dive team. Item 9 approved an additional $244,000 grant for career and recovery resources, which provides employment training and substance use disorder services to people transitioning out of homelessness. Item 10 updated the city's guidelines for home repair assistance related to Winter Storm Uri in 2021. It included increasing the max award amount from $6,000 to $10,000. Mayor Whitmire said this item illustrated the city's commitment to home repairs. He referenced, quote, misinformation, end quote, about his commitment to home repairs. He said he is working to repair the city's relationship with the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, or HUD, and blamed previous administrations for a lack of transparency, misuse of funds, and general corruption. Item 14 approved $200,000 for forensic documentation consulting services. All right, we're going to focus here on item 36 for a moment, the Capital Improvement Plan budget. The CIP is a rolling 5-year outline of infrastructure projects and their funding status. It has limited dedicated funding from multiple sources. This year's plan includes $16.7 billion over 5 years. Council members Ramirez, Peck, Jackson, Castix, Tatum, Alcorn, and Castillo proposed amendments. Council member Ramirez, at large, won. Proposed 3 amendments that all aim to increase the information and engagement that council members have when CIP projects are changed. He ended up withdrawing them all, but it instigated a lengthy discussion on the CIP process. Complaints included length of time it takes for projects to make it through the CIP to completion. Some projects have been in the pipeline for 10 to 15 years. Mystery around what projects are moved on and off the CIP and why. Lack of communication regarding CIP projects in general. Many projects are put into CIP with no funding allocated, which creates unrealistic expectations for the community. Mayor Whitmire criticized the CIP process and said it is essentially a wish list. He criticized past administrations, again, for telling department heads to withhold information from council members. Councilmember Pollard said, "I don't remember a time when council members couldn't go to a department head and speak to them directly about something." He offered to speak anytime with the mayor about the way things were. And he said, "You continuously reference what happened before you were here." Mayor Whitmire said, "You can't rewrite history." He referenced videotapes, his own remarks, documentation, and conversations with existing and former city directors. He said, quote, "It was very clear the direction that council members and directors received, and it's documented on council meetings." Councilmember Peck of District A, P6.02 proposed using money from the Dedicated Drainage and Street Renewal Fund, DDSRF, for major drainage work in Spring Shadows. Councilmember Peck and later Councilmember Alcorn advocated for using the DDSRF because it consistently has over $200 million in unassigned funds. Finance Director Dubowski and Houston Public Works Director Machi both explained how the DDSRF works and why those funds are not available. But it was still unclear to me. Councilmember Alcorn agreed, and she said, "I'm not convinced, and wants more explanation." Peck strongly advocated for this project, which includes areas where homes repeatedly flood, but ultimately withdrew it. Now, from Councilmember Jackson of District B, J7.01 asked for $18 million to rehab the Lakewood Library, which was destroyed in Hurricane Harvey in 2017. Mayor Whitmire said the money is spoken for and asked what Jackson would like taken off the CIP to offset it. She said she doesn't want anything taken off, which led to a bit of an awkward standstill. The mayor basically just repeated that there's no money for it. He wishes things were otherwise, but that's how it is. Jackson withdrew this amendment. J7.02 asked for the North Regional Library to be added back onto the CIP list. Similar to J7.02, it was ultimately withdrawn. J7.04, J7.05, and J7.06 all dealt with drainage funding. The mayor said, again, there is no funding available. There was some discussion on the futility of adding projects to the CIP without dedicated funding. CM Jackson stoically pushed for a vote. Only she and Councilmember Plummer voted yes, so these amendments failed. Wow. Councilmember Evan Shabazz, District D, withdrew all of her amendments. She advocated for the removal of the Blodgett Street bike lanes, as she is wont to do, saying, "The people want those bike lanes removed." Moving on to Item 39, making public comment meetings more accessible. Item 39 proposed moving one public comment session per month to Tuesday evening at 6 p.m. Public comment sessions are now at 2 p.m. on Tuesdays. This item was brought by Councilmember Castillo using Proposition A and co-signed by Councilmembers Alcorn and Peck. Councilmember Castix Tatum is not convinced the public wants evening public comment sessions. She cited zero public engagement at the related public hearing, which was held on Tuesday, May 27th at 10 a.m. Geez, was it accessible? She complained that evening meetings would cause hardship for council members returning the next morning at 8 a.m. Oh no, our public servants. She also doesn't want to interfere with attendance at PIP meetings and civic clubs. Mayor Whitmire agrees with the concept, but he thinks it needs more work. He suggested that a quorum requirement be added in because it's downright disrespectful when we're doing the people's business and there are four of us here. He suggested it might be good to take the public comment session to different locations around the city. Councilmember Castillo argued that public speakers have remarked about how inconvenient it is. Hearing from our constituents is a core function of our job, and as council members, we signed up for this. This is part of it, public session. Giving people an option to address us at a time that's more convenient, that works for more constituents, it's something we can figure out how to make work. He wants to pilot this and see how it works. It can be adjusted later if needed. Responding to Castix Tatum's claim that no one showed up to speak at the public hearing, he said, "We had people here to speak on it, and I say this with love. Councilmember Plummer's presentation took about an hour and a half, and then we took a veteran's proposal because the veterans had to leave. So by the time the item came up, we lost quorum in half the room, including the people that were there to speak." Mayor Whitmire said, "I hope meetings are reflective of Houstonians that are residents that are impacted, not people we have to clear the chamber of because they're disruptors." Councilmembers Castix Tatum and Councilmember Davis tagged this item. It's unclear what happens next. Maybe it'll be heard at a committee. Maybe there'll be another public hearing. I don't know. That's it for this meeting. Thank you to all of our Patreon supporters. If you think this project is worth supporting, I invite you to visit patreon.com/EmilyTakesNotes. You will get a shout out on this very podcast. Also, thanks to ACLU Texas and Houston in Action for their support. This podcast has music by Joe Wozni, and it was produced by Connor Clifton. That's it for this week. I'm Connor Clifton, and I thank you for listening.